Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When we sat in Jamie Vardy's house watching their game, Chelsea against Tottenham, and they drew the game, we eventually said, okay, let's get the Premier League done. And it was simply never in our minds. Also, sitting there, I was still like, it's not our role to win the Premier League. Everybody else has to do it, but not us. But when the final whistle blew, it was madness. It was, oh, this feeling was insane.
Hi, Sebastian Alvarado. Welcome to another episode of Coffee and Football, the show where I sit down with some of the most influential profiles in the game to learn about their lives and career journeys. Today's guest is Christian Fuchs, a former national team captain for Austria and Leicester City player. He was one of the main profiles on the team that against all odds ended up pulling off perhaps the greatest upset in sports history by winning the Premier League in 2016. In addition to discussing the journey and the aftermath of that season, we dive into his playing career that started in a tiny town in Austria, his entrepreneurial ambitions, the No Fuchs Given brand, his almost monthly commutes between Leicester and New York City. Christian is as much of a profile off the field as he's on it, and you'll understand why. And just like the last episode, this one has two parts, with a second part being released next week. So without further ado, here's part one with Christian Fuchs. Christian, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you here. Thanks for taking the time, especially since it's your vacation. So really appreciate it.
Thanks, Sebastian, and thank you for the coffee. Very much appreciate it after a nice night out with you.
Exactly. Yeah, we had to remind ourselves what we basically talked about.
We just had a little catch up.
Yeah, we'll edit this part out, but
you don't want to expose yourself.
No, I don't want to expose you, but you do know how to party. I can tell that. Well,
Shh, my wife is here.
Yeah, we have the wife and the agent here overlooking, so that we don't get into.
I really need to be nice now. Okay,
exactly. My first question, since the theme is coffee and football, always has to be, how do you typically like your coffee?
Oh, that's a very obvious question. I like it different ways, to be fair. Right now we have it black. Usually my coffee is like just an Americano with a shot of milk.
Where do you typically get it?
Anywhere. At home. I have a nice coffee machine at home with fresh beans, Colombia beans, obviously. And yeah, I brew it myself. I got to tell you, your coffee is the best right after mine. Next time you need to come to mine to have some Fuchs coffee.
Sounds good, and I'll pick you up on that. You're here in New York now. I understand you spend quite a bit of time here, even during season. How come?
Because my family is living over here. That's the main reason, obviously. I want to see my kids throughout the year. They are traveling a lot. They're coming to Leicester all the time. They're coming overseas, and it's a lot of traveling, which I appreciate. But then I want to stop that, at least when I can. I come over here whenever there's an international break. Whenever in the summer, it's my vacation time, then I'm here constantly. And yeah, I try to be here as much as possible.
How long have they been here?
Forever.
Wow.
Well, I got to know my wife here in New York. I don't need to tell the story now, but we met here 5 years ago. So now, yeah, my boys are growing up here, and yeah, I don't want to take them out of school and bring them to England. I mean, they're just growing up here. It's a good city to grow up in. It's a good country to grow up in. So I'm happy here.
What language do you speak with them?
Well, I tried at the beginning to speak some German, but I realized that because of the distance and not being in regular contact every day in person, it kind of fades away and it doesn't really work out. So I think by the time I'm here, which I'm planning to do in 2 years from now, I'm trying to focus more on that. But right now it's mainly English.
And you mentioned that you're here now, I guess, even more because of the international breaks.
Exactly.
You retired last year from the national team. How does it work like during season? Do you always have to report to the team that you're traveling or do you just get out any break that you can get?
Well, we have those international breaks that are giving me 4 days now. Back then, as you said, I retired from the national team, but when I played for the national team, there were no days off throughout the year. So it was only limited to the summertime. And now those 4 days, they help a lot. I need to tell them, okay, I'm going to New York, and they usually tell me, okay, enjoy your trip, have fun with the family. But it's because of doping reasons. So they are not coming to check in England because it means if I'm not showing up within 24 hours, that's a positive check, and that, would restrict me from playing football.
Has it ever been close?
No, because I always tell them where I am. I'm pretty transparent.
Okay, that sounds good. So now during the off season, what do you do to keep in shape?
We get our own schedule, our running schedule from the club. It's pretty long schedule, to be fair, because I'm here now for about six weeks, and 4 of them is running. And the good thing is that I probably do more than any other player because I'm running my soccer camps and I want to be involved. So I'm literally putting on you call them cleats here. In fact, they are boots. So I'm putting on my cleats and I'm just a footballer and I want to be on the field. I'm not a coach. I just want to run after the ball and score goals against the younger ones. Hey, they are kind of score goals.
You'll take any goal, right?
Yeah, I'll take them all. I'm leading goal scorer in my camp.
I bet.
To be fair, I very much enjoy the time on the field with younger players and see their enthusiasm. And I hope I can guide them and give back some that I experienced in my career.
What's the ultimate goal with the camps?
Find talent. In all fairness, find talent, scout them here, trying to, I don't want to create a team itself, but because we are located in Austria and the UK and in the USA, I want to kind of create a world team that we can bring to England, get the attention of a lot of scouts, teams, and I hope that we can help some kids make the dream come true and become professionals in Europe. That's my ultimate goal.
Is it mainly that you would send like individuals or do you send them as a team to play or?
We already had three boys over in Europe. 2 were training with Leicester City. 1 was training for 2 weeks with Mattersburg, my home team. And it can be that way, which is great. And then, as I told you, I want to put together a team that I bring over to the UK. I want to bring them to England because that's simply where football is at home and get them in front of teams, in front of scouts, play 3 games, 2 games, whatever it is, and see how they compete with them. And hopefully there's this one Fuchs running around that can sign at Leicester.
What are the ages?
8 to 16 right now.
How would you describe the level? How do you view, I guess, both the level where it is today and what do you see as the potential in the American market?
So, as of right now, I have to make this answer a little bit more detailed. So players here, they're very fit. Their fitness is great. The technique is great. What we experience now from bringing boys over from the sides that we have compared to each other is that the decision making sometimes is not fast enough. So we are now in the process of getting a weekly side in America. Right now we're planning upstate New York, but we also want to do one in Manhattan and maybe one just in the suburbs. And we want to work with those kids on those specific points. And when we think, okay, you're ready, then we are happy to offer the venue to bring them to Europe. And listen, everybody, every kid here right now is watching Champions League, is watching Premier League, is watching La Liga, whatever it is. And if they have the dream, the ambitions, and also the talent, and most of all, the right attitude to go there and give their best, then we will decide together what's the best for them.
Take me through a typical day for you. Well, now we're during vacation, but let's go to when you're in Leicester and during season. So from the moment you get up and then from there on.
Let me see. I mean, as a footballer, you always have some routines, which are, you know, I'm always putting on my left sock before the right one. I'm putting on my shorts with the left leg first. People don't understand that most of the footballers have a superstition. Some are bigger, some are smaller. But mine is obviously everything has to start with the left foot. Am I completely off topic? So how does my day look like? See, you got me really off topic because I'm so out of this routine. I think usually I'm getting up at 8:30. I'm not pretty sure right now. I mean, the last time I got up was 4 weeks, 5 weeks ago for training. But then let's say it's 8:30. I'm getting up, getting my coffee ready, go to training, have breakfast there. Then obviously at 10:30, we always start with training, get training done, go home. No, I have lunch at the training ground. Then I go home and then there are several projects that I'm working on. It's my soccer camp, Fox Soccer Academy, or it's, some clothing. I'm interested in clothing factory in the clothing business, which is a funny way to express myself.
In what way?
Well, first of all, the brand is called No Fuchs Given, which is my name, Christian Fuchs. So it's not a curse, but it's an attitude that I want to transport to everybody that's out there that can identify themselves with it. It's just living your life the way you want it and don't give too much Fuchs about anything. And the way I express myself is in short clips, videos that I challenged the other day Steve Nash in a, well, let's say it was an around the world challenge. It started pretty normal. He's pretty good in soccer. He's doing great drills. And every challenge is coming then with a punishment. So the loser has to fulfill a punishment. In this case, I shared the punishment with him because it was simply too funny. I wanted to be a part of it. I wanted to take it away a little bit from him. And we had to call the room service and order some champagne. The problem is our mouth was stuffed with cotton balls. So this guy really couldn't understand what we were saying. And I said, I want champagne. And after 5 minutes, he understood, okay, I want something. He always repeated, yeah, you want something. I was like, yeah, I want champagne. So it was pretty frustrating, but yeah, I never got my champagne, but it was a lot of fun.
When did you start the clothing line?
It's our first birthday. It was in April last year in 2016. And it started, as I said, as a fun project with the clips. And then we said, okay, let's do our own stuff. And it worked out pretty well.
And is that something that you want to kind of grow and potentially work with once you retire?
Definitely. Why not? I mean, we are trying to give it a shot. As I said, it started as a joke, as a hobby, but the response was so good that we said, okay, let's see. Let's try to invest a little bit. Let's take it more serious. And I'm looking forward to do more in that, especially after my career. Yes.
As you mentioned, you wrapped up the season over a month ago. Now that you've had a little bit of time to reflect, obviously the league wasn't as successful as the season previously, but you had a great Champions League run. How you feel about the season now that you've had some time to kind of absorb it and think about it?
You know, the expectations into the reigning champions are always higher than when you're a team that nobody's expecting anything from. So winning the Premier League with 5,000-1 odd, I don't think it really helped us the following year because now the expectations were much higher. But we still know that we are not that big team like Manchester City, Manchester United, where you simply have unlimited amounts of money to spend. No, we were basically the same team. We had Kante. We lost Kante to Chelsea, who was a very vital player in our system the year before. Overall, I think, you know, playing in the Champions League, which adds another, I think it was 10 games, is pretty tough given the size of the squad. So we most of the time played with the same squad, with the same players. Maybe here and there we changed something. So in my eyes, we played a good season. Obviously, at the end of the season, to maintain Premier League was very important. I think we did well there. We had a great run. And Champions League, we are very proud of. So this is something that nobody can take away from us. Also because, I mean, I played Champions League before with Schalke, but this was even more special because it came from a season that simply is in sports history always a big thing.
How would you say that your life has changed after becoming a Premier League champion?
It turned life upside down. The exposure was immense. The first couple of days right after winning the Premier League was insane. I could not have pictured that. I mean, just to put in numbers, you know, Austria is a small country, but we had to decline 180 requests just from Austria for interview requests. It's really, it was huge. And for me, it's still, okay, we won the title, amazing. But because it's my daily job still, I still cannot really understand what happened there. I mean, so many people talking to me about it, and they always say it's the biggest thing that ever happened in sports history. Meanwhile, for me, it's something that I do every day, not winning the title, obviously, but playing football. And so I believe when I stop playing football, then I will get to understand what it really meant.
Is it all for the better? Is it all positive? Or are there things that have become challenging or that's been kind of negative in your day-to-day life?
I think overall it has a positive effect. I mean, winning a title is something good and you should aspire for more. I like to come here to New York because you have more privacy, because not too many people know you on the street, which is kind of not possible when you... I mean, I'm living in Leicester. It's not really my favorite thing to go to the city and just walk around or go to restaurants. I prefer to go then to London, where you have, again, more privacy. But, you know, that comes with winning a title, with winning the Premier League, which is the biggest league, obviously, in the whole world. So not too many bad things, to be fair.
Yeah, I bet.
Hey, it brought us together.
Exactly, it did. Well, yeah, I guess it did. I did know about your name before.
Okay,
that.
Good.
So
good, I'm happy to hear that.
Because I'm Swedish and we've played you guys. And
I would love to say some Swedish words here right now.
Feel free.
I know you're going to cut them out.
You had a couple of good ones. But you did mention you still have some friendships in Sweden as well from your time in Germany.
Exactly. Matthias Koncha, who I played with in Bochum. He's like you. He's half Chilean. Yeah, Chilean. Yeah. So he's a fun dude.
I've heard he's a character.
Big time. Oh, you should definitely slick it. Oh, no.
I'm not going to slick at
no,
him.
No.
In no way. We are going to get into talking more about that amazing season and about your career. But I'd like to rewind the tape a bit first and ask a little bit about your upbringing. Where'd you grow up?
In a little town called Southend, where like 500 people living there, if so. It's on the countryside, so I was out every day and out and about with friends playing football all day long. That was all we did every day. And it was a great time. I'm not that often there anymore because now living in England and having family here in New York doesn't really allow me throughout the year to go back to Austria, but it's a nice place to go to.
In what way would you say that place has shaped you to become who you are today?
That's a good question. Not too many people ask me that yet. See, I left this town pretty early when I was 11 years old. I went to a bigger club called Wiener Neustadt. They're playing now in the Austrian Bundesliga, first league. And I was literally playing back then with 15 years against grown-ups. Where, so that's an interesting story. When I was 11, 12 years old, all those academies that are in Austria that are having a great youth system, they said that I'm not good enough for them. And, you know, you can take it either way. You can either say, okay, you can let it affect you in a negative way or in a positive way. And for me, it was then, okay, I'm going to show you guys what's up. And that was around when I was 11, 12 years old. And 5 years later, I signed my first professional contract. I found a guy, Heinz Griesmeier, who simply stood by my side, who helped me in every way possible. We did some extra shifts in training, did a lot of one-on-one sessions, and he's now running Fox Soccer Academy in Austria, which is great. And that certainly was one of the main facts, I think, that I was able to go that way, even without those so-called academies, which are not a bad thing. Don't get me wrong. They have great educational system there, but there are other ways possible. And that's also something that I want to show my players when they join Fox Soccer Academy, that there are other ways, even though they say you might not be good enough. It's not always the case.
Did you always believe in yourself? Because that must be a pretty tough...
I needed to.
Where does that confidence come from?
That's what my wife is asking me every day. Where do you have all this confidence from? Because I don't give a fooks. I think it was very important to be confident, but in the same time, humble. So I never thought of myself, yeah, I'm the shit, you know. I always knew I can learn more and more and more, and I always wanted to learn more. I never really saw myself being good enough to achieve this and that. No, there were other players, believe me, that were my same age, and they thought they are done already in their development. And that's also a lot of credit to my parents and to Heinz Griesmeier, that they kept me down to earth and really showed me, you know, there's so much more you need to learn. And even when I played professional for Mattersburg, and I had my first call up for the Austrian national team, which was when I was 19, I was only sub and I played the last 10 minutes against Croatia. And it was my first international experience, and sitting on the substitutes bench and watching the Croatian players, which were Petric and you name them, they were really well-known players, and see how physical they are. And I was already professional for 2 years. Just showed me, okay, there's still a lot to learn. And again, I kept going.
And to your point, I think it's important to pass on to kids today, especially all over the world, because academy systems are coming into place. It's getting more competitive at a younger age. And if you're 10, 11, 12, it's pretty tough to hear that you're not good enough.
Oh, yeah. It is. But then, as I said, you can take it either way. You can make the best out of it, or you can literally duck and just give up, which should not be the case.
What did your parents do for a living?
Oh, they're both retired. I mean, my mom retired a long time ago. My dad was he was running the financial department at a company. And yeah, my mom was at home taking care of me.
What's the most important advice that your father gave you?
Now you take me really back in a long time. See, all I remember from my childhood, but I believe that's the case with every parent, is that he did homework with me and there was always a fight. So I think what I learned is just to get shit done, just to get it done, and don't delay it too much. Just get it done. Whatever it is, if it's a small project, big project, doesn't matter. Just get it done.
Did you have any idols growing up?
I was looking up to Eric Cantona when he played for Manchester United back then, and even later to Rivaldo when he played for Barcelona. He almost had the same strong foot, left foot that I have, so he was pretty decent.
Yeah, he's close to you.
He's getting there.
What was that moment when you first realized that you had what it took to become a professional? Do you remember that?
I never really realized that myself. I only had people coming over to me saying or talking about me. And people told me then about people that talk about me, that I'm standing out. But I never really, and I, even now, I don't like to like to talk about myself too much, about my performances. Others can't do that. So I was just going. I think I had the talent at some point, or at least the work ethic to get there. Wanting to work and want to work your ass off helped me a lot.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And then you ended up signing professionally. You mentioned Mattersburg.
Mattersburg. Yeah, that's fine. You know how to pronounce it.
Yeah, German is one of the languages I don't know, though.
It's horrible to learn. Ask her.
You signed, I believe it was around 2002.
Three.
2003, the first professional contract. Take me through that. How did it happen?
Heinz Griesmeier. So Heinz Griesmeier, the guy that I told you about, that helped me push myself to the limit, he also built the initial contact to Mattersburg, and I had two trainings with them, with the first team, me being a 16-year-old then, and there was this one guy called Didi Kübauer, who has a big name in Austria. So he played in Spain, he played in Germany for Wolfsburg, and what happened, and again, people told me afterwards that that was one of the main reasons, which sounds probably stupid, but that's what it is. So we had this training, and obviously those older guys, they want to see what he's made out of, this young boy. So I went there, and they tackled me hard. And I think 5 minutes later, he was on the floor by me, and I said, I'm sorry. And afterwards, people were telling me, well, they like that attitude that you don't care what the name is, that you just want to play your football, and if they have to feel it, then or if they have to be in pain, then they have to be in pain, you know. If you have to hurt somebody, then you hurt somebody. So it sounds weird probably, but that was it.
After that, you ended up signing with Bochum. Was that in
5 years later? Yeah.
Or was it 5 years?
Five years later.
Well, which
2008 after the Euros. Yeah.
Well, you were still quite.
I was still quite young. Yeah, 22 is quite young.
Where was the team in when you signed?
First league. So that's what I can tell about my career, that I only played first league in each country I played in.
How was that transition to end up in the Bundesliga?
It was okay, because we had 2 months of preseason for the Euros, then the Euro 2008 in Austria. So I played with players that already played in Germany for the Austrian national team, obviously. And it helped a lot, because the quality was already higher than it was in the Austrian Bundesliga. So it was okay. It was not too hard.
What was like the biggest impression or the biggest surprise for you in coming to that league, being one of the very top leagues in the world?
That beside all the professionalism, that it's a big league, that you still can create friendships. It was really like Matthias Koncher. He was there when I showed up in Bochum, and as we both know, we still are in touch here and there. And he's simply a nice guy to have around. And you might think that the higher up you get, that there's less friendship, but there's still some there, and you still want to have fun and want to enjoy the time playing football with your teammates. So that's something that was a great experience to me.
How did you feel in the Bundesliga? How did you perform? Because all of a sudden you're playing against, you know, the Bayern Munichs and
I guess it was pretty okay, because given the fact that I started with Bochum, who is usually a team that goes up and down. Then after 2 years, ending up at Mainz, where we had where we conquered the fifth spot, which was the highest placement for Mainz in the history. And then playing for Schalke in the Europa League and Champions League, which is one of the main clubs in Germany. So I think I did pretty well. I'm pretty happy with my career there. 7 great years. But then after those 7 years, I thought, okay, I need a change for myself. Need to experience something else. And yeah, England came across, Leicester came across. They wanted to win the Premier League. I said, okay, and I made my move there.
So take me through that. When
it was not all the way like that, as you know.
Okay. But take me through that. How was it that, how did it happen that you were brought over to Leicester City?
Well, a lot of people think it's that glamorous, and that might be the case with Ronaldo, with Messi, if they ever make a transfer to another club. I doubt with Messi. But usually it's the agent is getting him some offers, and then you weigh your options. So I had some offers from Russia, where given my family situation, I didn't want to move too far away, because that would have meant 11 hours traveling instead of 6-7 hours where it is now. And England, I always wanted to play in England. The Foxes, Leicester, came across, which is also my name. So Fuchs means fox in German. And I took the chance. I went there, assigned, and that's it. It's not glamorous at all. But so I signed for them, and then I went on vacation. And we were at the beach in Antigua, and suddenly my agent's calling me saying, are you sitting? I'm like, no. Why? Well, sit down, because I have some news. I'm like, okay, hit me. Well, cannot be that bad. Well, they just fired Nigel Pearson. So he's the manager, you have to know, who signed me for Leicester. I never met him up until now, not in person. I just spoke to him twice on the phone. And you know how it is when you just join a new team with a manager that wanted you, and suddenly this manager disappears and he's not there anymore. You're kind of lost. But
what was going through your head when you heard that?
Well, I needed a drink. I was just standing at the bar, so I got my non-alcoholic drink, obviously. And see, the thing is, I just took it the way it is. And like I did at the beginning of my career, when some people told me I'm not good enough, I just wanted to make the best of the situation. And
it was Claudio Ranieri who came in.
Exactly.
What was your first meeting with him like?
He was presented in Austria. We were at the camp. I only knew Ranieri from TV, so he came across like a very strict person, typical Italian. No jokes, but it turned out to be the complete opposite way. So he was joking every day, literally. I think he also learned from the years and becoming older that not everything has to be 100% strict. So he gave us a lot of freedom, and it worked out pretty well. So this Italian coach coming to this team, Leicester, that barely escaped relegation the year before with the great escape, and suddenly you're completely on the other side of the table and winning the Premier League. It's an amazing story.
How would you describe the team when you first got there?
My first impression was a very good one. So I thought, how can this team play against relegation? How can it be? I was kind of right, because the following year we didn't play against relegation even better. But I was pretty confident that we will escape this relegation fight very fast, because the quality was simply there. And the last games of the previous season just showed, okay, there's the quality to achieve more than that. So I had a very positive one, and I was pretty happy and pretty confident to join the team.
What players made the biggest impression on you at the beginning?
I wouldn't say there was this one outstanding player. It was just the group, how the group works, how the dynamics are, and that it was simply a being together, working together, instead of doing individual stuff, which I had in my career too at several clubs. But this was very impressive that we really worked together as a team and tried to achieve a win in every game.
And during that first preseason, did you guys set up any goals, or what were those expectations?
Maintain Premier League.
That was
That's it. I mean, throughout. So at the beginning, it was 40 points. So we had 36 points after not even half the way of the season. We still set 40 points. So we really took it step by step. When we achieved the 40 points, we said, okay, first 10, top 10 of the table. And so on and so on. And eventually when we sat in Jamie Vardy's house watching their game, Chelsea against Tottenham, and they drew the game, we eventually said, okay, let's get the Premier League done. And it was simply never in our minds. Also, sitting there, I was still like, it's not our role to win the Premier League. Everybody else has to do it, but not us. But when the final whistle blew, it was madness. It was, oh, this feeling was insane.
Yeah, and there's that short video that's been circulated quite a bit.
That I showed you on my phone also the other night. That's still there in original.
What happened after that at the house?
We were watching Sky Sports News on TV, and it was live broadcasted from outside the house. So it was a weird feeling. But when I left, because Raluca, my wife, she was there, but she was at home, and I simply wanted to share this moment with her. So I took off after an hour or so. But leaving the house, it was, I guess that's how Hollywood stars feel. So you're driving the car, and because of all the flash from the cameras, you cannot see where you're going. So you just go blind and you hope not to hit anybody. It was madness. It was literally madness.
Benteke with the header away. Oh, what a screaming goal from Christian Fuchs. Leicester account in brilliant fashion.
So, I mean, obviously people started talking about Leicester, started taking, and the media and the fans started taking the team quite seriously, maybe even halfway through the season. What was that feeling like? Or how did their locker room kind of think about it? Because I remember it myself, even, you know, around Christmas time, people were saying, whoa, could this maybe happen?
I think the media and people outside, or let's say the majority of them, were just waiting for us to fall and to stop winning and to just get back to the old Leicester. It was never really a topic for us. So we just went on and tried to give our best, ignoring whatever was written, whatever was spoken about. And I think that was good for us. That was the strength that we had, that we were just confident with what we are doing. And okay, if we are not winning the Premier League, we didn't win in the previous 135 years. So why should we win it this year? But hey, we did it. We have won more than some other clubs in the Premier League. And we were very happy with that.
Yeah, I bet. And
did you support Leicester City? That's my question to you now.
For the win, yes. For the win, 100%. Yeah. I can't say that I have a specific team in the Premier League that's my team, so to speak. But there was a Swedish guy who used to play there back in the late 90s, I'd like to say. Pontus Kåmark.
Okay.
He was a right back. And obviously the Premier League is huge in Sweden, so yeah. You would already be, you know, fairly aware of that. And I guess in today's football landscape, and that's also something I wanted to ask you about, because it's become so tremendously commercial. Even the top teams in England, like sometimes I think Man City has done it, probably Chelsea too, where they have almost no English players on the pitch. It's just put together by these huge stars, you know. So I think that's also why you got, you know, a lot of fans from outside of the core Leicester fans to kind of root for that team.
Leicester has a lot of English players. That's a thing.
Yeah, exactly. And which is a big difference.
It's a huge difference. Overall, it's still the case that, as you said, with all those big teams, that they're not really building up on the youth, or on the youth players. And I spoke to, was it Demarai Gray or Ben Chilwell, when they played against the German under-21s national team? The numbers were something like 300 Bundesliga games against 60 Premier League games altogether, to both teams. So, and literally Germany was, I think they won against England. So it just shows where the priorities are.
Yeah. The kind of easy answer to why it was such a good season, and you know, I've heard it and I've heard you say it a couple of times too. Yeah, we had a great group and we believed in ourselves. But is there anything that you can kind of point to that most people might not be aware of why that became such a success?
Yeah, we were a great group and we believed in us. And yeah, at some point when you keep winning and the confidence grows like crazy, you're in a flow. And I think it's down to believe in your own strength and just be aware that, first of all, you're a Premier League player, so you're a great player. And then the support within the team, not to be jealous on anybody. Just, okay, I'm not playing, but I support the team outside. I try to give everything. I try to cheer for them. You know, it's, we had players that maybe played one or two games, but they performed in training and they kept the level in the training high. So that helped us to maintain the same performance, to maintain the level of performance pretty high. And yeah, I mean, for me, very crucial in that season was the Manchester City game, which was simply, it was a demonstration of great football. And it was kind of that turning point where some realized from the outside, okay, that could really happen. And it did. For us, it was never, as I told you before, it was never really the topic that we never really thought about, okay, we're going to win that. No, never. So I cannot give you another explanation than it coming down to teamwork and honest work on the field, because we didn't have the big stars. They resulted out of that season, but we didn't have the big stars back then. The big star was the team.
And Ranieri was hailed like a king afterward.
For him, giving us that freedom that we needed and not putting us on a short leash helped a lot.
And on that note, these days we see managers who, I mean, they're almost as famous as some of the biggest star players, and they seem to be getting a bigger and bigger role. In your mind, though, I mean, you've gone through a few different clubs, a few different countries. How big of a difference does a manager really make?
I think it's about, so you work with people, and you need to know how to manage people. It's not necessarily about, I mean, obviously it's important that you know football, that you know tactics, but it's about managing people, knowing that they have needs, personal needs, human needs, which is just normal. For me, it's, you know, every minute I can spend with my family here overseas, I'm happy, and it makes me happy. And it, if they give you this opportunity, then you're willing to give back. Yes, it's my job, but you can only do your job, or you can do your job much, much better when you feel happy, when your own values are appreciated. And he was very able in that. He was very good with handling people, which is, in my eyes, a much bigger role, because he has his assistant coaches. He has the coaches that are running the program on the field, the daily program. But that's a big role that maybe some people under there underestimate.
What are the main differences between, say, him and then Craig, who took over after?
That's something that people want to know, but I started working with both of them at the same time, and Craig is, as much as Claudio, he's very good in that as well. He knows what the players need. He works with them. He worked with them the last couple of years, so he knows them inside out. And yeah, he's also, I think he's a great manager.
So not all that much has necessarily changed because he came in.
See, Claudio Ranieri got fired, and 3 days later we won against Liverpool and had a great performance. So what can you change within 2 days? You cannot really change. You only can change the mindset a little bit and affect it, and getting back to what made us strong. And Craig is, as I said, he's very good in that. He knows exactly how to treat the players. He knows exactly what the players need. And football-wise, what can you change in 2 days? You have to be messiahs.
Yeah. But was there anything, like, let's say, in your mind that changed at that moment once you found out that Ranieri...
To be honest, I was shocked because nobody expected it right then. In so many other occasions in my career, for me, it's just a part of the business. I was playing in Germany for 7 years. No, I played overall for 15 years now, and I had as many managers. So it just becomes a part of the business. And as nice as the story was with Leicester winning the league, being the great underdogs, as hard it is not being successful, but needing to get back on winning streaks to maintain the league. So you have to weigh what's more important, the Cinderella story or maintaining the Premier League. And it was a decision that the bosses took. And with a lot of other decisions, they were kind of right.
listening. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please subscribe on iTunes and write a review. I would really appreciate it as we grow this podcast one listener at a time. If you have any feedback or ideas, feel free to send me an email at sebastian@coffeeandfootball.com. You can also link up with me via Twitter. The handle is @coffeesfootball. Stay tuned for next episode. It will be another amazing one. Thanks again and have a great week.